Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Sunshine, haven't I heard of you?
You're not a cop, are you?
Johnny Sunshine. Johnny Sunshine, I remember. Yeah, it was Los Angeles in the late 60s. Johnny Sunshine boss Jack. Hey, you were very hot, man.
Yeah.
Something happened there, though. Station fired you for some reason.
Well, I'll tell you something, baby. They all fire you sooner or later.
Yeah, no, but this was something that you, something you did.
Yeah, well, we all do things, right?
It was something that you said.
Yeah. Booger.
What?
I used the word booger on the air.
Right.
Yeah. I was making about 100 grand a year out there. Then one day I said, booger. A bunch of bozos called the station. Next thing I know, I'm in Amarillo hosting a garden show.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Angie's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a Kishka's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of The Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business's people and their love for trees. Jet streams. I'm sorry, I started laughing on Kishka. I'm like, what's that? You eat it? You don't sleep with it? Right.
Happy birthday, Ron Cowgill. Well, some of the mics were open and some of them weren't, but there you go. Since I got busted on the air last week, I thought I would bust Mr. Cowgill on the air this week. So I know he's listening. So happy birthday, dude. And Ron Cowgill is 152. Today?
He looks good for the age.
I know he does. Yeah. Looks really good for that age. For any other age, not so much. So, since he helped me celebrate mine, and I was not able to go. See, I don't get it. He, you know, invites me over. Well, actually, his wife invited me over last night to help celebrate. And his birthday's today, but they celebrated yesterday, and I said, wait a second. Saturdays, no. I don't go places on Saturday. Nope. I'm working on this thing that they call my radio show. So I called him, and, you know, I owe him a beer. And so but we'll take care of that in the future. And thanks to, you know, it was kind of funny on last Monday, because that was my birthday. And I worked all day. I worked like an 11-hour day videotaping a legal conference in Palatine. Don't ask me why.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah, I know. Woohoo! It was business valuation for divorce.
What?
Yeah. Yep.
You volunteered for this?
No. I get paid for it.
Okay.
Are you kidding me? I don't volunteer for something like that. So it's 11 hours of this. And actually, you know, they know what they're doing. They're really good. I'm just not a lawyer. right? The video guy. You know, if when you're in radio, got to have a side job someplace. Right, Denny? You know about that.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
You know it.
And so I got, while shooting the thing, kind of glancing at Facebook and all these happy birthdays are pouring in. So that was really fun to see that all day long. It kept me kind of entertained. Welcome to the show. Oh, my goodness. Have we got a jam-packed program today. And it's going to start with garden keepers. I've got Julie Samuels from Openlands here in the studio with me. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Mike.
Good to have you back.
Thank you. It's very good to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
My goal is to not get you fired. That's my goal.
Thanks. I appreciate it, Mike.
She doesn't look like a troublemaker.
No. She's not the one who's a troublemaker. I'm the troublemaker.
Yes.
You know, it's just the association. Guilt by association.
Yeah.
Julie is one of the folks who's behind a new program at Openlands. You've heard of tree keepers. I'm a tree keeper. Any other tree keepers in the room?
Yeah, I am.
Not yet. Julie. We talked about it.
Julie, no. You're not yet, are you, Sarah?
No.
Okay, we got to get you into the class. But
I
now
take the garden keepers class.
Well, that's the next one.
That's
garden keepers.
Like
okay.
Starts in February.
That's right.
Are there still slots?
There are a few slots. It's filling in fast, so I really recommend. After I've convinced all your listeners to take this class, that they hurry up and email me.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And all the information is on my website, MikeNovak.net, this week's show. We'll talk about that in a second. Rick DeMaio weather. I haven't caught any weather from any other stations, and it's not worth it, obviously. You know, no other weather forecaster is as good as Rick DeMaio. And I have to tell you right now, I've had people write to me, and they write to me all the time and say, you know, your segment with Rick DeMaio is too short. You have to do a longer segment. Well, you know, he already takes up half the show. Not really. But he already has a longer segment than Tom Skilling. Okay, now that's going some. All right, I'm just letting you know. So what we're going to do, I talked to Rick, and he's going to be in the studio.
Nice.
Yeah. He never comes down here. I don't think he likes me, actually. But, you know, he's going to come down.
You should hear the things he says before I put him on the phone.
I know. You get him on the phone. That guy? I got to do his show again? But he's coming down to the studio on the 10th of February. And it was funny because I said, I want you to come down to the studio. And he said, okay, let's wait till after the Super Bowl. I'm thinking, well, what's he doing today? There's no Super Bowl, but that's okay. So after the Super Bowl, a week after the Super Bowl, Rick's going to come in here at 9 a.m., and we're going to wax poetic on weather for an hour.
But Rick's on today, though, right?
Oh, yeah, he's on today.
We got to
regular
talk about,
slot.
Talking about this ice.
Well, that's where I kind of started going, is that I didn't listen on the way in. I haven't seen any ice. Mm-hmm. Is it still supposed to come? We'll ask Rick.
Nice.
And if anybody knows, he will. The ice storm. Second hour, Kay McKean from Scarce. And they do wonderful, wonderful stuff. I know, Julie, you know about Scarce.
Yes. Many years.
They're just a great organization. And I'm trying to remember what Scarce stands for, but the idea is that they're into all kinds of recycling activities. They do book drop-offs. It's school and community assistance for recycling and composting education. All right. That's a long name, so that's why they call it Scarce. And they're out in the near western suburbs, and that doesn't mean that they can't help you if you're in the city. They do recycling extravaganzas. For instance, they're promoting one in Glen Ellen, the Glen Ellen office. That's going to be on February 23rd, also the same day as this conference you and I are talking about later. Mm-hmm. Electronics, paper shredding, books, school and office supplies, musical instruments, holiday lights, scrap metal, yarn, art supplies, American flags, eyeglasses, bicycles, propane tanks, fire extinguishers, keys, hearing aids, canning jars, LP records. Now, they say LP, but what about CDs? Oh. There's the bane of our existence as a recycling. And you should, I have to, in full disclosure, let you know that Julie Samuels is not only with Openland, she's a board member of the Chicago Recycling Coalition.
Yes, I am.
And we pay you a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, which is why if you get me fired today, it won't matter, as long as I'm still on the board.
And folks, just so you know, that's sarcasm. I don't know if you recognize sarcasm when you hear it. And speaking of recycling, I want to call attention to the fact that tomorrow is the second of two fundraising dinners at DMK Burger Bar. They have just been so wonderful to step up for the Chicago Recycling Coalition and put together these dinners where the proceeds go to the Chicago Recycling Coalition. I went to the one 2 weeks ago on the 14th, and a bunch of people sitting around a table having burgers and having beer, and it's just the coolest thing. And it's 9 o'clock tomorrow. Now, I'm not sure, actually, that there are any seats left for tomorrow's. But that shouldn't stop you from donating to the Chicago Recycling Coalition, right?
That's right.
That's right. So, you know, you can go to chicagorecycling.org and make a contribution there. That would be lovely. But the DMK people have just been fabulous, and I appreciate it. And this is something they do all year long. Each month, they devote to a different cause. And so you should take advantage of that if you can, or you know, go to the DMK Burger Bar at different times of the year, so that you can contribute to good causes, which they do every month of the year. Now, the location is 2954 North Sheffield Avenue in Chicago. You can give them a call at 773-360-8686. And again, I want to thank them very much for contributing to the Chicago Recycling Coalition. And this is where you say, hey, patronize the people who patronize us. So since they've been so good to us, I would say go to the burger bar. And by the way, that dinner tomorrow is at 9. I thought, what? 9 o'clock on a Monday? Well, I went there on the 14th and it was packed. So what do I know about nightlife, Denny? I know nothing about nightlife. And you're kind of a nightlife guy.
In fact, I love the nightlife and I like the boogie.
No, it's I like the nightlife baby.
I didn't know that.
You got to add that in. Haven't you ever heard the Cars? All right. The other thing is I got a note. Next week, one of the things we're going to do is do a quick update on what's happening out at Starved Rock with the open pit sand mine and other things going on. But I received this message from Tracy Yang, clean water organizer at the Sierra Club. And she tells me that there's a public hearing tomorrow, January 28th, 7 p.m., in the city council chambers in the city of Ottawa. And she writes that Archer Daniels Midland, ADM, has requested a public hearing to rezone a parcel of land from agricultural to industrial use. They are trying to annex the parcels into the city of Ottawa so they can bypass the LaSalle County Board, who initially denied and later approved a similar request last year. And they want to establish a barge terminal that will serve as the Mississippi Sand Company's shipping facility to send the sand out from the area. And Julie's just shaking her head and going,
No.
I promised I wouldn't get you fired, okay? Sorry. I promised I wouldn't get you fired.
Well, we are concerned. Actually, Open Lands is involved with the
Yes, they are. You're Open Lands, and you're one of the organizations that filed suit.
Yes, we are.
And just to let you know, the other thing that so this is going on, and by the way, Mississippi Sand is the company. Mississippi Sand LLC is the company that wants to do the open pit mine right next to the eastern entrance of Starved Rock State Park. Regard to that, Tracy writes, the Department of Natural Resources is currently working to formulate a response to the complaint, which was filed by Open Lands, by Sierra Club, and by the Prairie Rivers Network, which we talked about in this show. There's no word from IDNR yet. It is my understanding, writes Tracy, that IDNR is currently working on appointing outside counsel to represent them in this case as a special assistant attorney general. And we'll have updates more. And meanwhile, the IEPA, Illinois Environmental Protection Agency, reports they are still finalizing their review of the Sierra Club's request that they require an individual site-specific permit allowing the sand mine to discharge into Horseshoe Creek. Lots going on. I mean, there's still different avenues. Yes.
Well, Mike, this all connects to hydraulic fracturing, and I don't know how far you've gone into that.
We have covered that a bit on the show, too, okay. Because, yeah, this is like the first step. You get the sand,
right.
And then it's used for hydraulic fracturing.
Right.
And I got some, and I can't even cover this today, but more emails came to me yesterday, some just out of the blue, regarding that area, and it's about contaminated water that has suddenly popped up in LaSalle County. I don't know. Have you seen any of this?
No.
I wasn't planning to even talk about this today, and if I can find it, here we go. Now it's going to take me a second. I'm not going to do it now, but apparently there is... Some folks have reported that there is contaminated water in the area, and I got a an email from several people and Daphne Mitchell is one of them, they were talking about that, and I have to admit that since I wasn't planning to do it today, I put it in a file somewhere in my computer, and now I can't track it down. So I'm sure that's going to come up next week too. But the idea is we'll follow up on the fracking problem at Starved Rock State Park. And meanwhile, I got an email from Bob Cusera, who has a house that way, and also is in the city of Chicago. And he wrote this note, and you got to understand he writes in Bob speak, so you have to always appreciate that. Bob writes about an activity, the Eagle Watching Weekend, going on at the Illinois Waterway Visitor Center, that is, let's see. It's located on D. Bennett Road across the river from Starved Rock State Park. The visitor center is adjacent to Starved Rock Lock and Dam. And the center's expansive windows and outdoor balcony provide outstanding opportunities to comfortably view eagles perched in trees on Leopold and Plum Islands or fishing below Starved Rock Lock and Dam. And it's Bald Eagle Watch Weekend. When members of the Starved Rock Audubon Society provide powerful spotting scopes for dramatic close-up views, and that's going on this weekend. It's the fourth weekend, so you could go there today. Bob writes, by the way, he says, what a swell opportunity to visit Starved Rock and see the ancient stone formations before they are blown to gravel, sticks, and stems by their miney old neighbors. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it still allows the eagles to come. I think one of our concerns is that with all the mining going on, the eagles will be even more endangered than they already are.
Did you post that, Lisa, on Facebook?
No, actually, a friend of mine, Laura Hayden, who actually was, she's a reservist and she was just at the inauguration. She was out there yesterday taking photographs. They're
cool.
On my Facebook page. Look at this. She's an amazing photographer.
Look at that. But can you share that on
sure.
our? Oh, my God. Those are wonderful.
And I know she sells her pictures, too, if anybody's interested to just buy a print from her. Look at she.
Well,
just
you got to post those so people can. Oh, they are fabulous.
Yeah, I'll post them.
Okay, so put that up there. So if that's something, you know, before the ice storm hits, and I don't know if there is an ice storm, so, but I had to mention that. So I think I've covered pretty much everything we need to get to before we get to Julie Samuels, who's in the studio. And by the way, with me today, Lisa Albrecht.
Good morning.
Alternative energy expert, Sarah Batka from Chicago Master Gardeners.
I'm here.
Okay.
Present.
You get to say hi.
Present.
Cope Dog. Do I get to use your real name, Rob?
Yeah, you can. Hi, it's Rob Carthall with Garden Keepers and the Monarch Garden and a lot of other exciting things.
Yeah.
Who's Bugs. Don't forget
and Bugs. I'm wearing my Bugs pin, yes. So you can see it on the radio. Yeah.
And Bugs stands for?
Oh, that's great.
Building Urban Gardens.
Right. Now, the thing is, Bugs doesn't exist anymore.
That's right.
But it's being rolled into this new program.
Right.
And of course, Denny Sheeter is on the phone there. I'm going to say hi to. But and let's talk about that. Julie Samuels from Open Lands. Garden Keeper starts in February. And it's sort of taking the place of a couple of other things that happened.
Yes, it is. It's the next phase of evolution, you might say, over the last 25 or so years in Chicago of helping residents of Chicago to use the land in the city, the vacant land, to its best advantage for the environment and for the people. I'd like to kind of give credit to Ron Wolford and Cooperative Extension and the Chicago Botanic Garden for being the early operators and supporters of community gardeners and taking care of the land. And so we started the Building Urban Gardens program as a way of meeting the needs of gardeners in the city, general, not just community gardeners, but gardeners, to understand what we call eco-gardening. It's gardening with the earth. It's gardening so that you have beauty and aesthetics, but you also have contribute to natural pollinators and all those really good things. So we started with the Bugs class. That was probably about 10 years ago. And we moved more than kind of rapidly toward supporting the growing local food movement in Chicago. It's something that was something we always supported, that there would be food as part of what you put in your garden. But it became really with the state of the economy and the increasing vacant land in the city that this was something that people needed to have information about, not just the eco-gardening, but the way to bring people together to create an organization to make a community garden work. And we called that the Homegrown Chicago Food Garden Network. So two classes, when do they run? You know, we finally decided that the very best thing to do would be to combine these classes, focus on community gardening, and we actually are running it twice a year now. There's a spring class and a fall class. So,
but wait, but you haven't had the first one. This is going to be the first
this
one.
This will be the first one.
But you're planning it to have it.
We're planning in the fall.
Yeah. So I always like that when you say, we're running, and you haven't actually had the first one. Okay, now that's, I appreciate the optimism involved.
We're confident, Mike.
We will have two classes this year, yeah.
Well, for the organizers, they are running, I'm sure, at this point.
Yeah, they are.
Well, yes, well, certainly there's a lot going on. This is the question I get all the time. As you work with gardens, what do you do all winter long?
Oh.
What they don't realize, it's the busiest time of the year. Oh, getting ready for the garden is
you know, it's interesting.
Thing.
One of my wonderful listeners, Tracy DeMarco, who has been on the show before because she plays the harp, and I had her on last year, and she and Denny remembers that. He's not.
Yeah,
that
was awesome.
It was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I got to have her back. I think we did it last year. It was on April Fool's Day.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, well, this is the new format for the Mike Novak Show. But
Valentine's Day.
Maybe not. Maybe. That would do it. But Tracy wrote this morning, he goes, you need to talk more about gardening, just plain old gardening stuff. And as Julie points out, well, this is the time of year when people do conferences and they get all organized and everything. But we are having the seed keepers on next week. So I think maybe we'll talk about seed starting next week, which would be a really, really good thing.
Right. Yeah.
So get your seeds out, folks, and get your catalogs out. I want to get back to you in just a second, Julie.
Okay.
I forgot to finish my thought. You know, I am the most distractible man in radio. I mentioned Kay McKean from Scarce, and the idea of her being here is we're going to talk about food scrap composting, which is a very big deal, as you know. For community gardens, too. You know, you want to do that. And that's a conference coming up. And then at the very end of the show today, I buried the lead kind of here, which is Farmer John Peterson from Angelic Organics Learning Center and Angelic Organics, who is the star of the documentary The Real Dirt on Farmer John, is on the show to talk about his Kickstarter campaign. And he's a piece of work. He's fun. And, well, you guys should enjoy that. So I would say stick around for that. So back to the seed keepers.
Garden keepers.
Now, see, I'm all scared and mixed up here.
Yeah.
The garden keeper starts in February.
Right, right. And let me continue. And, you know, one of the problems we have in our field here is that there are just a handful of words we use to explain everything, like green and sustainable and keeper in this case.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just asking your listeners out there to help us come up with some new words to describe these things.
But, really? Seriously?
Yeah, right. So what do you mean by green anyway, you know, or sustainable? But
I have no idea.
I know. It kind of depends who you're talking to. So I didn't go into homegrown Chicago was originally done because one of the things we noticed in the community gardens we've been working with since 1990, which is about when we started becoming involved in helping people start in vacant lots, was that people aren't born being community organizers. So they don't really understand how to bring people together, without some help, to do this thing together, work together, keep it going together. And that was a need we felt that needed to be met, because a lot of gardeners are at a point now with the gardens that we've been working on, Extension, the Botanic Garden, and us, for over 20 years now, that there's going to be turnover. And the best way to do that is to have an organization to deal with that turnover. But, of course, the organization can also do a whole lot more work than one person can. Mm-hmm. And so that's what Homegrown Chicago is about, and that's what we have combined with our eco-gardening class is the community organizing piece. And that kind of sounds dry and off-putting, but it's actually a lot of fun. People enjoy coming together to learn how to work together, and it's amazing how much they already know. They just need to be supported in what they're doing. And so the class, not only our support as an organization, but the support from the other community gardeners in the room. So it becomes a network almost immediately upon the first class.
Mm-hmm. And the first class starts on February 16th.
Right, February 16th.
Called Getting Started. And I imagine at this point, or at that class, it's sort of that overview of, especially the people who are shrugging and saying, I want to do this. It's really important for my community, and I have no idea.
Right, exactly. So it's kind of like, when did this start? And usually my response to that in the class is, as long as there have been people, they have been growing food together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but how do we do this in this urban environment?
Mm-hmm.
So that is, and then we talk about how do you bring people together. There are also fundamentals we talk about in a community garden about land acquisition, testing soil, the fact that we have contaminated land in
here,
the community.
Which, I've done and found it in my backyard.
Yes.
And so it's a word to the wise, which is don't start slamming your vegetables in the ground unless you've had a soil test. Not just for lead, but there's arsenic, and there's all kinds of things that can happen in a city.
Yes, organic compounds, there are all kinds of things. When I came in, Rob made a comment about the onion. There's an article about gorillas in there. But what I say
can't throw that out there.
Sorry, I just want to say that the reason I mentioned that is I see a lot of gorilla gardening going on. In other words,
I thought it was gorilla. Is this gorilla?
Gorilla, right? G-U-E-R.
Gorilla, my dreams. Yeah.
But it's all of a sudden the garden shows up and you see them planting directly into the soil. And I just, you know, I'm so concerned because there's lead there. There's lead in virtually every square inch of the city of Chicago. But there are also other potential contaminants. 400 ppm parts per million is about the highest that the EPA recommends.
And I was speaking somewhere recently and I said 400 ppm parts per million and people rolled their eyes as if to say, yeah, it's kind of lenient, don't you think? Because there are organizations that say 100 ppm and no more.
Right, yeah. Right. 400 is like you don't have children in it, but that's the absolute thing.
Actually, EPA says 400 for children, 1,200 for adults.
Yeah.
And yet there are other people say that's too high.
Right.
You know, the Canadian standards are a lot stricter, and there's other standards that are stricter.
Yeah.
So
it's, as low as you can go. But one of our gardens in the North Lawndale community came in at 2,300 ppm.
That's my backyard.
Yeah.
That's my backyard.
Yeah.
If right next to the house. Why? Yeah. Because it's a 125-year-old house, and how many coats of lead paint do you think have been on that thing over the years?
And how many decades of gasoline with lead?
Well, not in my backyard necessarily, but...
It does float. It does float.
Well, in the parkways, if you're going to do something in a parkway, you know, you got to be careful about that.
Yeah. So just continuing with garden keepers is that we really... The goal is to help provide people the tools to do the... developing the people aspect of the garden as well as the garden part of the garden. And there is ongoing technical assistance. We commit that as you put your garden together, if there are issues, we're please call. One of us can come out and counsel if there's a need for that. And that's in addition to that aspect, we're doing continuing education classes. One of the things the community gardeners are very concerned about this year is the drought. How to garden in drought. And so that will be something that we will address.
Because there's no reason to think that we're not going to have it again this year.
Right.
I mean, things could change tomorrow. Again, Rick DeMaio weather at 9:45.
Well, we have it right now.
Well, yeah, we're in the middle of one right now. We had an inch of rain 3 weeks ago, and that's been pretty much it for the fall and winter. And we've got a dusting of snow, and, you know, that can fake people out because it sits there for 2 weeks because it doesn't melt. But there's no moisture there to speak of. And we're going to be going into 2013 gardening season with very little moisture in the soil.
Yes, absolutely. Right.
And obviously, I took one of your courses. Which one was it? The one, predecessor to Garden Keepers.
We're thinking about doing this thing. Let's bring some people together and practice on them.
And I was the guinea pig. Yeah, I was one of the guinea pigs. But the first thing you say is, you know, you look at the sun. You got to have a space. Yeah. You got to have people. You have to have sun. And you have to have water. And if you can't figure out where you're getting your water from, you might as well go home because that's got to be part of the equation.
Right. And that's actually a much bigger focus now. We're blowing up our class much more to deal with resource conservation. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's always been about being safe, not using chemicals, but also conserving water is a critically important thing.
Yeah.
And certainly creating your own soil amendment, your own compost, and design of the garden. We have, we have a new faculty member this year, Anna Maria Leone, and her partner,
wonderful.
Michael Webb.
Oh, I love her
wonderful.
Westerns.
Yeah, her Westerns.
Oh, no, never mind. That's somebody else. Never mind.
No, that's I Love Lucy.
No. Oh, I was thinking of Sergio. Okay, yeah.
But Anna Maria and her partner, Michael, will be doing our last class. And actually, part of it will happen at the Inspiration Cafe. And I hope your listeners are familiar with that wonderful institution.
Yeah, we had them as guests.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Maybe a year ago?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
At Inspiration Kitchens?
Yeah. Oh, no, yeah. No, I know that. I'm just trying to remember when it was. It was, and I love Inspiration Cafe. I just think it's great. And it's around the corner from Garfield Park Conservatory.
Yeah.
So when you go into the conservatory to decompress from the world,
absolutely,
which is a great place to do it, then go around the corner. And Sarah, tell us why Inspiration Cafe is so wonderful.
It's the social enterprise arm of the Inspiration Corporation. So it's a job training program for people who face barriers to employment. So they will prepare students for to get entry-level jobs in the culinary industry and teach them soft skills like communication, interviewing skills. They also teach culinary math, like how to double or triple a recipe, in addition to like the knife skills and the cooking and everything. It's such a fantastic program. It's no cost to the participants. And the students are preparing the food that's served in the restaurants. Mm-hmm. And it is wonderful food. It's just a marvelous enterprise.
It is. It's a great place, and people should take advantage of it because it's kind of a hidden gem right now.
Right, and their motto is dine well and do good.
Yes.
And it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. I like that idea.
Yeah.
Getting back, by the way, that's that is Sarah Batka from Cook County and Chicago Master Gardeners. And excuse me. Well, swallow my tongue. Julie Samuels is here in the studio from Open Lands, and we're promoting Garden Keepers, which will start the 16th of February. Here's the way the classes go, and because we're running out of time a little bit here, and I want to talk about the other thing, which is the 23rd of February. But the classes, if you want to get involved in Garden Keepers, getting started on the 16th, on the 23rd is a special event, which we will talk about in a second, the Chicago Community Gardeners' first annual planning conference. And Rob and I actually have another name for it. We are thinking that maybe, and you'll probably get fired for this. We're thinking of calling it the Big Commie Garden Conference.
Oh, no.
Yes,
I like confab.
And I threw in the word confab. So I'm thinking the Big Commie Garden Confab. Open Lands won't have any trouble with that.
I don't know. I'm not sure if I should say this, but that's going to have Marxist connotations. And
no, it's not. See, that's the whole point. Is that when we say it means community. Everybody knows that.
Commie? Okay.
The Commie Gardens? Come on. And for people who think it's Marxist, they need to wake up, you know?
Right.
It's just, don't
it's
be silly.
Okay, so it's an opportunity to educate
people
on what it really means.
And besides, Rob posted that yesterday, and you grow girl, who's got, you know, like 23,000 Twitter followers, loves it, and she thinks she's praying that we use that. So I'm thinking of the Big Commie Garden Confab.
Okay, well, one of the people that really has to weigh in on this is Ben Helfand from Neighborspace, because it's kind of Open Lands and Ben with Neighborspace who are providing the professional partnering.
Oh, yeah, but
and so we'll have to wait, Mike.
He's a right wing tool. Come on.
Oh, no.
I'm afraid you're going to get fired, Mike.
They can't fire me. This is my radio show. I own it. No, I'm just kidding. He is not. Ben Helfand is with Neighborspace, and Neighborspace is a fabulous organization that helps people find places where they can put Commie Gardens. March 2nd, going back to the list, Creating Sustainable Organization. March 9th, Eco Garden Design. March 16th, Growing from the Ground Up. March 23rd, Plant Selection for a Healthy Garden. March 30th, Containers, Hardscape, and Installation. And then May 11th, the big graduation potluck. So this is what happens in Garden Keepers if you sign up for it. And the cost is, I've got it here. It's $300 per garden. A minimum of four people from each garden is suggested. And I understand, and I think it's a great idea. Get everybody involved.
Right from the beginning.
Right
from the beginning. In fact, there is a kind of pre-homework to the class that every group that registers, we ask them to fill in like a 4 or 5 page questionnaire that really says, like, why are you doing this? What do you hope to get out of it? Where would you like to be in 5 years with this garden? So it kind of helps to get them talking about it before they even start the class. And then we hope that the class will really kind of bring them together to find solutions during the class and new ideas from the class and from other gardeners in the group.
And so, again, that's $75 per person for a group of four, so it's $300 total for the entire series of classes. It's possible, if space allows, that individuals might be able to get involved later in the course, maybe in classes 3 through 6, but the whole point of the first several classes is how to organize the community.
Exactly.
All right. The other thing is the 23rd, the Big Commie Garden
Confab.
What about FabCon? Like a fabulous conference.
Yes. We're building on something
now
here.
That's a
good
idea.
The Big Commie Garden FabCon. It's hard to say, but I like it.
I like FabCon.
Rob, since Rob and I went to an organizing meeting last Wednesday about that, Why don't we have Rob talk about that just a little
could
bit?
Could I give a little background before we do this? How this all came about and why we're doing it?
Yeah.
Things have changed in the city of Chicago in the last couple of years. There was a very active Department of Environment and Green Corps Chicago, which provided a lot of support, training, and stuff for community gardens.
And if you listen to my show, you realize that the Department of the Environment no longer exists. Just saying.
Right. And Green Corps is still, it's attached to the
Department of Transportation. Yeah, they took the Green Corps, which was part of the environment thing and gardening, and now it's part of transportation. The logic kind of escapes me personally, but...
Well, it's a job training program, and they're considering that this is where, you know, working on the parkways, the streets, the roads, and even some housing.
True, but the problem is that they used to work with community gardens.
Yes.
And now that part of it has been taken away, unfortunately. Yes. So we need something to take its place.
Right. So this was, we all kind of panicked when we heard this. You know, it's like, oh, no, what do we do? And then a little bit of time passed, and 3 a.m, I wake up and I say, you know, when you have a challenge, it means you have also an opportunity.
That's right.
And one of the things that we have been concerned about community gardens is, first of all, that they're not usually organized well enough to exist very long. So what we have now is an opportunity to bring the gardeners together to create an organization of gardens, a citywide organization of community gardens, potentially organized by region, northeast, west, and south, where the gardeners who know best what they want and need can work together to make those things happen and to become self-sufficient and to have, here's one of those words I'm going to throw in, create sustainable gardens.
Oh, I hate that word.
I know. But so somebody's got to come up with that.
We need a new word. Yeah, we got to get rid of green and sustainable.
Right. But self-sufficient is one of the words that we've been trying to use lately.
That really means
that they're not dependent on anybody. They're not dependent on the city. That doesn't mean that they don't need resources. So another thing we're hoping is when they come together that they will be able to clearly enunciate what it is they need from a government in order to help maybe coordinate or manage.
Not just the government, but from other NGOs and,
exactly
and whatever.
Right. Exactly
and, so
right.
The three of us were part of a huge group representing gardens from all over the city that were at the Chicago Center for Green Technology on Wednesday planning this event on the 23rd where even more gardeners can come together and perhaps create an organization that will fill that vacuum.
Exactly right. Exactly.
I think, you know, as we were saying with Garden Keepers and the Bugs class and the best part of being a master gardener, when you get this many people together in a room who all do have skills, we all find that, you know, we have the skills we need if we can start to rely on each other and start networking.
Right.
Last year, you know, Green Corps no longer does the plant giveaways and seed giveaways, but we had, I think, a very successful couple of perennial giveaways and divides last year that were, you know, they were smaller than Green Corps used to be, but it was like a trial run of let's have it run and organized by and for community gardens. And they were great. You know, the plants got given away. Everybody got free plants. Everybody went home happy. And we still have nurseries. You know, I've got people in my cell phone to call up and say, hey, I've got a couple community gardens that need some plants. Mm-hmm. Can you help me out here?
Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to do is put together this big event on the 23rd, the Big Commie Garden FabCon, and invite community gardeners from all over the city to sit down, figure out what their priorities are, and then move forward. And perhaps, we don't know. We don't know if an organization will arise out of this, but it might. And at the very least, this is a way for people to get in touch with each other and to network.
Right. And, Mike, you had asked earlier about the Green and Growing Fair and GreenNet.
Yeah.
GreenNet was really the professional association, including, you know, partners I've mentioned before. For how many years? Over almost 20 years, GreenNet has been bringing organizations together to kind of provide for community gardens. And one of the things that was done was the Green and Growing Fair that they held for community gardens. So GreenNet is I think it's maybe it's past its time because community gardeners are rising up. Honestly, a lot of this doesn't come because we brought people together. It's because they wanted it and they needed it, and they're rising up and demanding it. And so one of the things that for a host of reasons may not be happening is the Green and Growing Fair at the Garfield Park Conservatory. There may be another kind of event there. But there will be fairs in the future. There will be opportunities like that. But I wanted to make sure that people knew that that was...
And to wrap up here, I'm going to say that folks can go to... there's a Facebook page now for this organization called the CCCG, which is the Chicago Community Gardeners...
Connecting Chicago.
All right. Yeah. It doesn't even say that here. Okay. Be nice if it said there. There it is. Connecting Chicago Community Gardeners. And, yeah, you're gonna have to track it down. It's got a Dahlia, as its picture on Facebook. So go to CCCG. See, now that if that doesn't sound like the Soviet Union, I don't know what. Yeah. Okay.
No, that was the USSR. Yes. Come on.
You know. No, it was CCCP, remember?
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, so now we got the So it works, the commie garden thing. Okay, great. We're all in trouble. All right. Okay. Julie Samuels, thank you so much.
Okay, can I put one more ad in?
Yes, you can.
This year is a very important year. It's the 50th anniversary of Open Lands. We were founded in 1963, and half a century that we have been around doing really incredible things, from the Joliet Arsenal becoming the Medewin to Hackmatack at the Lakeshore Preserve, and the community open space projects that we've been able to support in the city of Chicago.
You grab Mr. Edelman by the lapels when next time you're in the office and say, you need to be on Mike's show.
Absolutely. So that I'm writing it down right now.
Okay, Jerry Edelman, CEO and president and guru.
Oh, that would be great. And I know people would love to hear. Jerry is just the wisest, most passionate
speaker. A cool guy, really cool guy. Julie Samuels from Open Lands. Go to my website, MikeNovak.net. A lot of this information is up there. And Rick DeMaio weather is coming up next. Meanwhile, here's a tip from the Care of Trees about what you can expect when you give them a call. One, they will arrange to have a certified arborist meet with you to evaluate your trees. By the way, they're the only tree care company to make confirmation calls and measure their results. Two, they come to your place and do an assessment of your tree care needs. Three, they'll provide you with recommendations and give you a price estimate on the spot. Four, your tree care work will be scheduled based on factors like the best time of year to perform the service, your availability, and more. During the work, your needs will be continually reevaluated. Five, you will be contacted after the work is done to make sure you were happy. If you weren't satisfied, they will continue to care for your trees until you are. And it's hard to imagine better service than that. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
So do you think I got Julie fired? Do you think I got her good and fired? That's kind of what I'm wondering here. I hope I didn't. She's wonderful, and I'm so glad to have her here. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We go immediately to line two today, Rick DeMaio. And
good morning, Mike.
Good morning. I'm going to get in trouble with the people who love you, and that's why I'm bringing you in for an hour on the 10th. Well, you know, they always say I don't give you enough time. So,
oh, that's all right. You got other stuff to talk about.
But
I mean, it's gardeners, all that kind of stuff.
You sound like you have a little cold there.
Oh, I have a big cold.
Oh, gosh, I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay. That's what this time of the year is for, right? I always like the term little cold.
That's because right. When you have it, it's major.
Yeah, you might as well just get the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
I'll just take the left side of the nostril.
I hope I didn't give it to you, Rick.
No. You know, it's funny because last night was one of those nights where, like, you go to bed on the right side, and then the right side gets filled up, and you wake up, you're on the left side, and you're kind of going back and forth, and then it goes up ahead. But I've gotten to the point now where I don't take anything for my cold, but I did get a flu shot on Friday, so I think that probably maybe kicked it off a little bit.
Yeah. I don't think so, though. They're completely different animals, you realize.
Yeah, no, I know that. Hey, I got a flu shot 1 year, and a month later, I contracted pneumonia, so go figure it, right?
Oh, that, yeah. And, you know, flu shots, I heard a report they're only like 60 to 70% effective.
Right,
so getting a flu shot doesn't mean you won't get the flu. It'll help
yeah,
keep it.
I think that's a pretty good number.
Who knows what that's going to do, you know? Yeah. So, anyway, but the bottom line is, Mike, we have like a potpourri of weather coming at us. We have freezing rain today, steady rain tomorrow, possibility of thunderstorms and heavy rain on Tuesday, and maybe even record temperatures. And after that, bone-chilling cold, and same kind of weird weather pattern that we're in right now is somewhat similar to what we had back on the date yesterday and the day before, 1967, when Chicago recorded its greatest snowfall ever, and that was, you know, the blizzard of 67 preceded by temperatures in the mid-60s with heavy rain and also thunderstorms as well. So, again, every time it wants to get really cold, something happens where, you know, we get this punch of mild air, and hopefully the ground's going to warm up a little bit and thaw out a little bit today, where the rain that we do get is able to, you know, infiltrate into the soil. So we're keeping our fingers crossed for that.
Yeah, because if it doesn't, there's going to be boxes floating in my basement.
I know. There's and the thing about it is I don't think there's going to be, you know, major flooding in some of the river areas because the rivers are so low that they'll be able to handle it. But what you might get is, you know, there's a lot of ice on the rivers because it has been cold. So you get these what's called river ice jams. So there's a lot of little things to consider. But still, nothing in the way of any significant freezing rain. So, you know, we could talk about gardening stuff like that, but I know if people are listening and saying, just give me, you know, I just want to know what's going to happen today. If you are looking at a radar right now at home and you're wondering, why is the screen green but there's nothing falling, that's because a lot of that precipitation that's being detected by the radar is actually beginning to evaporate before it reaches the ground. And where that rain is actually occurring, the temperature of the atmosphere, about 3,000 to 4,000 feet above the ground, is in the mid to upper 30s and expected to climb to almost 50 degrees by later on today. So this cold layer at the surface, which has now been kept colder due to the fact that we finally have snow on the ground, not a lot, but enough, and it has been cold as far as air temperature, so the ground is actually almost frozen in some areas. Once that rain hits the ground, it freezes on contact. That's what we get, what's called freezing rain. And we could even get a little bit of sleet, but it doesn't look like it's going to last long. If it develops in the next hour or two, it's probably going to be done by about 3 or 4 o'clock. So if you have any plans that requires driving or even walking over the next 3 or 4 hours, you know, give yourself a little bit of extra care, because I've seen this before, Mike. When you get an inch of snow, like we had on Friday, which caused major traffic accidents.
Oh, my gosh.
Jams.
It was an inch of snow, and it shut down the whole city.
It was insane.
Well, there's a couple of reasons for that. It was a very, very powdery snow, and it fell at temperatures below the optimum temperature for ice to work, and because not ice, for salt to work. And for the salt to work, it needs to be crushed by the tires of the cars driving over it. So if you're driving really slow and the ice is being, you know, dumped into an inch of fluffy snow, all you're doing is you're basically just taking the ice, putting it into the snow, and then lightly stepping on it, and it doesn't work. Also, because the ground was so cold and we hadn't had any snow of any significance in over a month, there was no residual chemicals on the ground. So the sidewalks, once this freezing rain develops in the next couple of hours, are going to be extremely slick. But I do think the main roadways will be fine. But it was interesting to see, you know, 2.5 hour travel times on the inbound Kennedy at 8 o'clock on a Friday morning due to an inch of snow. It shows you how much we are dependent on, you know, streets and sanitation and IDOT keeping the streets clear during a 1-inch snowfall. So it was kind of nice to see.
I don't know. I was looking at it thinking, this is a Michael Bolandic moment here. And
but it's funny because it was, you know, 1967 on the 26th of January when 23 inches of snow made national news. And here I am driving around Friday afternoon, and I'm listening to the national radio report at the top of the hour, and 1 inch of snow made national news because we finally got an inch of snow. We broke the, you know, record of 335 days. So it's been that kind of a winter, hasn't it?
Absolutely. And so this, how much rain do you think we're going to get? And does it make a dent in anything?
You know, I think it's going to make a great dent because today we're going to get maybe about 0.2 inch of freezing rain, and that's not going to really do much. But the stuff that gets here on Monday night into Tuesday could accumulate maybe 1 inch to 1.5 inches. And the key is whether or not we're going to warm up the ground enough where we can get that top 2 or 3 inches of soil somewhat spongy so that rain could filter into the soil. That's, I think, going to be the key here. So we're looking for about 1.5 to 2 inches of rain, particularly south of us, Monday night into Tuesday. And if temperatures get above 59 degrees Tuesday, which is an outside chance it could do, that'll break the record for the 29th of January, which is phenomenal.
And then the bottom falls out.
Much colder weather in here for Thursday and Friday.
Wow. Okay. Well, listen, the 10th of February, Rick DeMaio coming into studio for the whole first hour. Get your weather and climate questions ready. We're going to do it.
Yeah, absolutely, Mike.
All right. Take care, Rick. I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Second hour, we've got Scarce, and we've got Farmer John, who's going to talk about his Kickstarter campaign. I hope you stick around.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Welcome back. We got props in the studio. We've got air piano.
That was excellent air piano. You're learning from me quite well, Mr. Novak.
I do videos of you, and I watch them at home. I want to put up some YouTube of...
I thought that was a secret.
Yeah, that was a little creepy.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
I don't mind, though. Whatever.
Denny, I'm watching you.
Oh, my. I gotta go.
I know what you did last summer and fall and spring.
Oh, Lord, winds meet the press.
Second hour of the show, and how's everybody doing? We got a nice storm coming in. Yay. And then temperatures. You know what scares me now? I realized that we're going to get a bunch of rain, and my basement's going to fill up. It's going to happen because... Everything's clogged up down there. So now every time it rains, I panic. This is not good. We need to move forward here, and it's only because you folks might not be aware of this, but I mentioned this many times on the show that deep tunnel empties into my basement, and that's they set it up that way.
Lucky you.
Yeah, lucky me. Isn't that wonderful? That's Kay McKean from Scarce, and she brought visual aids into the studio today. It's because you deal with everything.
We do.
You're the flotsam and jetsam of life. That's what you deal with.
Yes, sir.
which is a terrifying thing. How is it that you decided in your life to deal with the flotsam and jetsam of things? And you've been doing this a long time, longer than most people.
Yeah, I've been green for a long time. I luckily grew up with parents who cared about the environment, grandmas who did, people who taught us that things are normal. If you work with the systems, so I kind of lucked out.
You lucked. I don't know if you lucked out. I mean, it's it's this burden, you know, to some degree, and I mean that in a nice way. I mean, I have the same burden. What happens is, and you find this out the minute you start caring about all the stuff we have, and you become aware that we have all this stuff, and most of it's garbage. Okay. Most of the stuff we buy, and even, you know, my latest one that I've become really aware of, and I have to change my whole life because of it, is tea bags. Every damn box of tea now has tea bags wrapped in plastic. I mean, Trader Joe's. I'll tell you, Trader Joe's, a lot of people love Trader Joe's. In terms of plastic, it's one of the worst of all the chains out there, because everything's wrapped in plastic.
I like the metal ones. They tend to only be the bag and not the wrapper.
Right.
Like the round metal bag, or the box, the metal tins.
That is that because then, it keeps the freshness?
Then you have a metal tin.
That's recyclable.
Yeah, but that's recyclable.
Right.
And so now, and I know there are people who are screaming at the radio right now and saying, use the little ball and fill it up with the loose tea. Well, yeah, I'm going to do that. Because I've become aware that you can practically not buy tea bags anymore more that aren't wrapped in plastic. Mm-hmm. And it drives me nuts. And so now I'm going to have to change that part of my life to do that, to accommodate the idiots who've decided that the only way we can have fresh tea is to wrap it in plastic. And these little things, and I had the woman on last year who wrote the book on how she got tried to get rid of plastic in her life.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, what's her name? And I'm not going to remember. It's I'll never be able to remember. Do you remember?
We'll look it up.
Yeah. Right. And it's plastic free or something like that. Or go back to past shows. That's an excuse for people to go, past shows. I'm on Mike Novak page, MikeNovak.net. And she was on, and she ruined my sleep, basically, because now I'm aware of all the plastic in the world. And those choices are the ones you have to make actually before you go to the store.
Yeah, before.
You have to know what your alternatives are before you walk in. Otherwise, you're going to stand there and go, this one time it won't matter. And you do that every time if you're not planning ahead. And we're killing ourselves with this stuff. And you more than anybody is probably aware of that, aren't you, Kay?
I am, and I'm really upset about those little coffee things, you know, those single serve coffee that you K-cups or something.
Oh, the Keurig K-cups.
Oh, yes, my gosh.
What are those things?
The thing we have in the studio where you put the single.
The thing that's in our kitchen here at CPT?
Yeah,
sitting next
to the styrofoam cups.
Because every bit of coffee that's in there, we can't get it out of there. I tried to get it out of there. Those little covers are hard to get off to compost the coffee grounds, so we lose the coffee grounds. We're making about a billion of those.
Yeah. Now, apparently you can buy a reusable piece that goes into that machine. So if you got one as a gift and then you don't like doing it as a regular basis, mm-hmm. you're going to keep the thing, but go get the recyclable container and put your own tea and put your own coffee in it and stop buying the things that you throw away.
We tried the compostable ones at home. They really didn't work very well. So,
well, it's like the compostable plasticware.
Exactly.
Technically, it's compostable, but you have to have almost professional composting
commercial composting.
You've got to be able to heat that to 160, 70 degrees, whatever the, you know, the critical mass on that. Otherwise, you throw those in your compost pile, you're going to have forks in a couple of years. You're going to be digging through and you're going to find forks.
Right. Can you podcast just that last minute? And I can give it to my family. I'm constantly dragging plastic silverware out of the garbage at every family event, including last weekend. And just because it can be thrown away does not mean it should be thrown away.
And then you wash it?
And then I wash it, and I've never bought plastic silverware in my life, and yet I have buckets and buckets of it.
And then if you know that...
And then I take it to shelters or somewhere.
And then if you know that there's BPA in almost all of our plastic silverware, then there's another reason not to use that ever.
Sidetracked again.
No, it's not sidetracked. It just... It overwhelms me. At some point. This is why I say I can't sleep anymore.
So you have to focus on the positive.
You have to focus on the positive. Like the hose you have in front of you.
Since 1987, we've been working on getting lead out of our garden hoses, and now there are 6 different brands you can buy, and they tell you right on the front, lead-free.
I have been talking about this for several years in garden talks, where I say if it does not say lead-free, you can assume it has lead in it, and it's the PVC, and it's also the brass parts of it as well. RV hoses apparently don't have lead.
The white ones, right?
White with the blue stripe, generally. I have found that the lead-free hoses are generally lighter green. Are they?
They're a whole bunch of different colors.
Okay.
Ace Hardware has one that's blue with a white stripe. But they've improved also. As soon as they started coming out, we have more brands and more styles.
And you know what people tell me? They say, well, we've had lead in hoses forever. When I was a kid, I drank from the hose, and I'm still here. But the fact that you say that alerts me to the fact that you have brain damage.
That's right. Exactly right. And they've just lowered the standards for the permissible amount of lead that we're saying is okay in kids, and you were talking about it on your last show. This is really important. You know what? When you have a garden in your backyard, you usually have your garden in the same spot every year where you have enough sunlight. So you're putting lead after lead after lead right out of your hose into the food that you're growing.
And guess what, folks? The lead builds up when it sits in the sun, when it sits there and it's got water in it and it leaches into the water. And then what do people do? Well, they run out the hose if they're going to drink from it. But where are they running it out? They're running it out into their garden.
Yep. But we're lucky now. California passed a great law that says you have to tell people what's in the products they buy. So now, Mike, on the back of hoses, you know, that all the little fine print that nobody reads, it tells you now that there's lead in every hose. If it's possible that it's going to be sold in California, there is a disclaimer telling you there's lead on the back. So now it should say lead-free in the front if you buy it. And on the back, in that small print, it'll tell you there's lead if it has lead in the hose. But you just have to read it, and people know how to hook up a hose, so they don't read the back.
Well, people don't read anything.
Well, that's true.
That's true, but... But, I wonder when I tell people, get a lead-free hose. The problem is people walk into a store and they're looking for the cheapest. Not the safest.
Right.
And I imagine the lead-free costs a tiny bit more.
Tiny bit more, but I think we should know that for the whole society, State of Michigan did a study, and it was $4.85 billion of lost wages and incarcerations and special need teachers for people with lead poisoning.
I need to tell you, I don't trust anything coming out of the state of Michigan right now, okay?
Really?
Just saying. No, I don't know. That state has gone off the deep end, okay? And that's my home state. Uh-oh. No, their study is probably true. I'm speaking politically.
Okay.
They're so beyond the pale, and I feel sorry for you people, and I know some folks in Michigan can hear this show, and I am from Michigan, and it just makes me sad. What a sad place. But the study, you know... It's probably accurate, and it's just that we need to get the word out and make sure that there are more companies doing this. So there's 6. It probably doesn't matter what the name of the companies are. What matters is where you can get the hoses.
Yes, Costco and Ace Hardware. There's lots of different places, and online as well.
Mm-hmm. So when you go, actually got a lead-free hose at a Menards several years ago.
Yeah.
I was looking around. I said, okay, I'm not getting one unless it's lead-free. And bingo, there it was.
Mike, it's the number one present I buy people. You have a baby, you get a lead-free hose. You buy a house, you get two lead-free hoses, one for the front yard, one for the backyard. You graduate from college, you get a lead-free hose. Honest to goodness, that's what I buy for people. Hostess gifts, lead-free hoses.
And you got to remember that.
That's cool.
I think it's a great
new
gift.
New baby, though?
Well, because the new babies are going to have a little pool, and you're going to fill that pool with
true.
Lead in their pool.
That's true.
You know, and the people who know that our songbirds are in trouble and right now with not enough moisture, fill in your bird bath. So if you're going to put lead from your hose into your bird bath, that's all our songbirds need.
That's where they'll run out the hose. Oh, well, it's been sitting in the sun. I know. Let's fill the bird bath before we water the garden.
Wow, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Well, I really worry about that. We wrote a letter to the National Audubon Society trying to get them to put it out on all their magazines and let people know that this is our songbirds are in enough trouble without feeding them lead.
You think? Last week we were talking about putting up wind turbines in Lake Michigan, which is, as it turns out, is not that dangerous to songbirds. But the idea is there's a lot of bird mortality, and most of it is caused by buildings and caused by animals. We don't need to add to it with this. Automobiles, airplanes, birds just have it rough, don't they?
They really have it rough.
That is Kay McKean. She is with Scarce, which stands for?
School and Community Assistance for Recycling and Composting Education.
Could you have a longer name?
Well, you know, Scarce, we rescue books, and so books are scarce for many kids right here in the Chicagoland area, mm-hmm. many teachers who need books. We rescue crayons and make super crayons for handicapped kids. So we're talking about things that are scarce, school mm-hmm. supplies, books, clean air, clean water, healthy soil.
Well, here's what I'd like to do, if you don't mind. We're going to talk about the seminar coming up. Mm-hmm. But if folks want to call in and ask a recycling question.
Super.
I'd love to, because you probably know more about it than just about anybody. And you probably teach me a few things. Mm-hmm. 773-763-9278 is our telephone number. 773-763-9278. Doesn't matter whether you're in the city, whether you're in the suburbs, whatever, because Kay has handled it all. And it's just amazing how many different things you find to recycle and help people with. I was looking at that Glen Ellen thing. I don't know if you heard that me mention that earlier. All the different things that you're going to have there. Medicines is mm-hmm. one of the things you teach people about recycling. What should people know about medicine?
Don't flush them down the toilet anymore.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Don't pour them down the drain. Yep. There are police stations where you can take them, and police stations are great partners because they're open 7 days a week and 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Many police know that the number one way kids do drugs now is through their parents' or their grandparents' medicine cabinet. So police are not really interested in the water protection, but they are definitely interested in getting medicines out of the hands of kids. And people making mistakes taking the wrong medicine. We, of course, want medicines not to go down the drain, not to mix in our water with our fish. Our water sanitary treatment centers cannot get medicines out. So easy solution.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's get to a bee in my bonnet because I've mentioned this before. And since I have you in the room, batteries. Ordinary batteries where the Illinois EPA says, throw them in the garbage. We have stopped recycling batteries. Does that tick you off as much as it ticks me off?
It's one of the things that we're working on almost every single day. We've got to change the U.S. EPA law so that we can capture those batteries. And so not just because there's zinc or other heavy metals in them, that's the regular home kind of batteries, lithium, nickel, cadmium, but because of the steel, the stainless steel, the copper, whatever metals, we want to keep those metals in the system, not wasted.
Yeah, and I just can't figure out. It's just like we got lazy and thought. I asked somebody about it, and somebody who should know, and that person said, "There's just not enough metal in it to and materials to be recycled properly." And I was thinking, "Well, wait a second. What if you have billions of them? And we do have billions mm-hmm. of them, and now they're being thrown into landfills.
And we're putting them in new places. You know, kids have the light-up shoes, and there's batteries in there. There's those singing cards that people buy. You know, you open the card, and it sings to you. There's batteries in there. There's circuit boards in there. There's copper wire. There's brass speakers. There's metals in there that should be really recycled.
Mm-hmm.
And you buy those cards. It increases the weight. It increases the diesel fuel for shipping them around. And then grandma gets a birthday card. And now is she really going to take out the heavy metal, the battery, the circuit board to get it to the right place? Probably not. People eventually put it in the recycling bin. And as you know, the companies that recycle are paper. The shredders are magnetized. Well, brass is non-ferrous. It doesn't stick to the magnet. Now we're adding contaminants to our paper recycling. We don't want batteries shredded up in our paper. So we need to start thinking about why we're buying items that have batteries in them. Do we really need them? Mm-hmm. And if you want to send your grandma a singing card, then send a return envelope so they can mail it back to you, and then you can take it apart when they're done and get it to all the right places.
Ooh, I'll give that. That gets a ding. All right.
Oh, a ding.
And I want to say happy birthday, Ron Cowgill. If you got one of those cards, pal, you better be recycling everything in it. I'm just saying. Oh, man. We are getting some phone calls, so let's go to, oh, it's Santo, the bus driver. Santo, it's been a long time since you've been on the show. How are you?
Life is beautiful all the time.
Great to hear from you. What's up? What do you need?
Okay, I got two comments.
Okay.
First of all, on the recycling part that you're talking about recycling, maybe in order to encourage recycling a little bit more in the city, maybe you need to start telling the spot prices of what people could get for their batteries and for what they can get for it. Because when you start talking money, then people maybe start to recycle more, because then they're seeing dollar signs instead of just thinking of that inconvenience sometimes of recycling.
Well, the obviously the economic component is critical. Let's let Kay address that for a second.
Yeah. Can I say this other thing, too?
Sure, go ahead.
Because I got them driving right now.
Oh, that's true. I'm sorry. Okay,
anyway,
good.
Okay, so here's what I've been doing with my, I've been taking my dishwater and my bath water, like anywhere from 5 to 15 gallons of water a day. Instead of segmenting it down the sewer, I take it and put it in the buckets, and I've been putting it underneath my trees. I got like 24 trees on my property, and when I moved in, I only had 7. Now I got 24. Anyways, I've been putting buckets of water every day underneath my trees. Now, I'm wondering, does the alkaline from the soap have any effect on it? Okay? Okay. I got to go. I'll leave you with those two questions, and then I'll listen to you on the radio, okay?
All right. Thanks, Santo. Always great hearing from you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Santo, the bus driver, and there he goes. And I'm glad he's practiced safe driving there, Santo. But I'm glad he listens to Chicago's Progressive Talk. Kay?
Well, so for scrap metal, a lot of people have bent pots and pans and things like that. And if you're going to put out metal that you don't want anymore, set it to the side of your garbage can if you want it. There are people driving around the city, driving around the suburbs, collecting all that scrap metal, whether it's copper, whether it's brass, whether it's pipes, whatever it is. And they're recycling that scrap metal. They are one of our best resources. And if you leave it, make it easy for people, they'll collect it. You won't put it in the garbage, and they'll make a little bit of money to pay for their gas.
All right, so you're saying that the scrap collectors are still interested in that kind of metal?
Oh, you betcha. Pots and pans and all kinds of things like that. Yep.
Wow. Okay. As for the using the gray water for watering trees, I can tell you right now that I would assume there's not a huge problem with that, using that for trees. You have to be careful about garden,
the kind of soap you're buying.
The kind of soap you're buying, yeah.
We say non-edibles.
Yeah, non-edibles is what I'm thinking.
Yep.
And so for landscape that's not edible, I don't think there's a problem with that. I need to do a little more research on that, but from what I can tell, I don't think there is. Again, non-edibles is probably the way you want to go with that, and you don't want to. It's not potable, obviously, and which means you can't drink it. But I don't think you're doing a bad job there, Santo, by using this under your trees, because for one thing, we're in a drought, and we're going to get to the point where we're figuring out how to use our gray water.
Gray water, yeah.
And it's the best thing. And gray water is basically, it's water from bathroom sinks, showers, tubs, washing machines.
No bleach. You don't want to use any bleach.
No bleach.
Right.
It's water that has not come into contact with feces.
Right. No fabric softener.
Right. It may contain traces of dirt, food, grease, hair.
Right.
And certain household cleaning products. And I'm glad that got brought up, because in a few weeks, I'm going to have Kaida Muhammad from the South Side, who does a safe household cleaning seminar.
Great.
She's going to be on the program in a few weeks, and we're going to talk about ways to use cleaning products and what kind of cleaning products you should use that are safer. So that is something that that you can keep in mind, and that and I'll have to look and find out exactly when she's on the show, and I'll get to that in a second. So let's go back to the phones, and I believe it's Amtrak Tim. How you doing, Tim?
Doing pretty good, Mike. I've got a little experience with the subject we've been talking about. And I used to work for a place where we had mercury switches on site for a level, and we'd send those off to be recycled when they were exhausted, when we wanted to change them out. But a couple of years ago, the Toxic Substances Control Act was changed that what basically made you a small quantity generator if you recycled toxic metals like mercury or lead. And I was wondering if one of the ways we could encourage people to recycle these metals and keep them out of landfills is to modify that part of TSCA, to encourage stores to take back the CFLs to get them recycled. Because mercury is an incredibly easy, simple metal to recycle. We shouldn't be mining any new. We should just be using what we have in the system.
Right. Iowa, the state of Iowa, many years ago through the League of Women Voters, had a law that they passed where you had a fee. So if you bought batteries at a hardware store, then when you were done with those batteries, you took them back and you got the refund because you paid up front to buy that hazardous waste. Half of that money went to use for the proper disposal and half you got back. People were very encouraged to go back to the hardware store and get half that money back, right? And we kept that hazardous waste out of the garbage, and that could be done for mercury thermometers, all kinds of things.
Just like
A lot of these stores, I mean, as soon as you start recycling, say, mercury, you immediately become a small quantity generator, which requires a whole series of paperwork, liability issues. I'm wondering if we should go back to what we had before, where if you recycle a metal and you don't keep it on site, it doesn't count against doesn't immediately convert you into a small quantity generator with all the legal and paperwork requirements.
And they did that for the fluorescent tubes and the fluorescent compact fluorescents. They did that exactly thing. And so now different cities are buying what they're called bulb eaters. And those bulb eaters are going to allow citizens to bring in their tube bulbs. So the fluorescent tubes for their grow lights, the fluorescent tubes for their aquariums, the four-footers, the T5, T8, T12s. Mm-hmm. Keep the mercury out of the landfill and capture all of that heavy metal.
Then why are we seeing such a small number of stores? When I try to bring back my CFLs, I get so many people at service desk kind of give me this, shaking their fingers saying, no, we're not taking them back. We're happy to sell them to you in Illinois, but we're not taking them back.
Well, Home Depot is doing a really good job taking back the compact fluorescents, and some of the Ace Hardwares are as well.
Okay, so the only one that in the Chicagoland area that they'll take back the CFLs will be Home Depot then.
And some of the Ace Hardwares, yep.
Okay. Well, and of course, you can take those two in Chicago to the hazardous waste drop-off on North Branch,
and
right?
You can take them to Naperville. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of communities have their own pickups, and you'd have to check with your local municipality to find out when and where those are.
Hanover Park has a nice one, and different businesses are starting to buy them, or I guess government organizations. Addison Park District has one, Wheaton-Warrenville School District has one, and now, like I said, the city of Wheaton, we've bought one, and we're going to allow residents to bring their tube lights to us so we can keep the mercury out of the environment.
Tim, before I let you go, I'm going to tell you one thing. I've been looking into this question that I know you bring up all the time about thorium reactors, nuclear reactors. I have been in touch with people from the American Nuclear Society, and I also have that information you sent me about the thorium people, and I'm in the process of bringing them together, and we're going to have that conversation on the show at some point in the future.
Okay, well, I didn't bring it up this time.
I know, and I anticipated, and I just wanted to let you know that I am looking into it.
Okay. The other question is concerning these rechargeable batteries, also contained a lot of also metals that are under TSCA. Do we also have other places those can be going to?
Well, that's the difference, Tim, is that the rechargeables are still accepted. People still will recycle the rechargeables. What concerns me is they will not accept the non-rechargeables in a lot of places. We have sort of given up on those. And why is that, Kay?
Well, because it costs money, 32 to 42 cents a pound to recycle the alkaline and some of those others. So people want the rechargeables because they get a little bit of money for that heavy metal. but they don't want the alkaline, where there is either so little of anything in there or the small amount of zinc, a small amount of lithium. So it just costs them too much money to do it. And you have to be careful because some stores have signs up that say, we accept all batteries. Well, then people think that accept means recycling. They're just going to pick through and take the ones that they get money for, and then they throw out all the other ones. So you have to really ask questions when you're thinking somebody is recycling batteries to see what they're really doing with them.
All right. All right, Tim, I got to let you go, but thanks again for calling. Always a pleasure hearing from you. 773-763-9278 is our telephone number. A couple of quick things, and then I want to get to you. I'll take a break, and then we're going to get to you about the food, well, as we call F-scrap.
Mm-hmm.
It's a term I've now become acquainted with, F-scrap. It sounds kind of risque, doesn't it? Kaida Muhammad is the chairperson of the Ash Park Garden Club. She's going to be here on the 24th of February with Cassidy Randall with a group called Women's Voices for the Earth. And that's womenandenvironment.org. Kaida is doing a hands-on workshop for people who would like to know how to make their own non-chemical household disinfectants and cleaners for spring cleaning. And she's been working with Cassidy Randall on that. So that we're going to talk about that on the 24th of February. I also found a little bit back to Santo's question about gray water. One thing you need to keep in mind about gray water is that it tends to be alkaline. And some plants don't like alkalinity. Now, that being said, our soils are alkaline here in the Midwest, or at least around Chicago. Not certain, you know, on this side of the lake, let's say. It's a little different over on the Michigan side and Indiana. It depends where you are. So, you know, if you don't know, check with your local extension office to find out about alkalinity in your soil. Plants like gardenias, camellias, which we can't grow anyway. But rhododendrons don't like acid soil, or don't like alkaline soil, rather. So they're not real happy with gray water. The longer list includes English holly, heavenly bamboo, sacred bamboo, English yew, and none of those are particularly native. And there's a reason that they don't like it, because the natives can tolerate alkalinity, which is another reason to grow native plants in the area. So that is just another thing to consider when you're using gray water systems. Okay, I have Kay McKean from Scarce in the studio. We're going to get to the F-Scrap conference in just a second. After what happened earlier this week, it's clear that there's a whole new era in America. And I'm not talking about politics. I'm talking about the weather. Winter is back, baby. Who knows? We might have an ice storm today. And to deal with it, you need the January-February issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. How's that for a lead-in? Now, not because there are tips on how to layer your clothes on a hot winter day, but because there's a story about hot new plants for a hot summer, which might be coming. Jim Now from Ball Horticultural Company runs down the list of plants that you are going to want to get your hands on, because they are the plant breeder's cream of the crop. And also because some of these new varieties are going to be able to survive another brutal July in the Midwest. Yeah, winter's back, but wait till summer gets here. Then there's my column on the inside back page. Talk about brutal. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over town, or get a subscription. Go ahead, do it right now. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Paradise and put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it all seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? It'd be a paradise and put up a parking lot.
They did that right across the street from me. No, I'm kidding. But they do it in a lot of places. I got an email from Fred who says, okay, we all know that loose tea is better, but bags are easier and more portable. I mean, yeah, we love the convenience, you know, especially if you can recycle it. And if you got a tea bag, bam, compost pile, and it's done. Now, Fred writes, I go to Chinatown to buy tea in bags. Some are just the bags in a thin cardboard box. Others have each bag wrapped in paper. Also, Centrella and other small stores have bags of tea with only a wrapper on the outer box. Yeah, I mean, this is the way they used to do it. All the tea, you know, you bought Lipton. I remember as a kid, it was all in paper. Nobody complained. Who's complaining? Are people whining about their tea being stale? It's a tea bag, for crying out loud. It activates with water, doesn't it? At least I thought it does. And he writes, P.S., another big plastic pusher is Aldi. Their fresh veggies are all wrapped. Well, that's just a shame that that is the case. And that actually kind of leads us into the conversation about the conference that is coming up on the 7th mm-hmm. of February, which I'm in the process of signing up for. I'm going to spend the day out in
Lombard. The Westin.
Woohoo! At the Westin. Spending my days in hotels at conferences. But this is an interesting one. It's called Illinois Food Scrap Composting Seminar, Looking to the Future. Some of us are geeky in this way. It's a day-long seminar on composting of food scraps, and it's open to just about anybody, businesses, schools, landscape services, greenhouses, individuals like me. Of course, I'm the Chicago Recycling Coalition, and that's kind of plays into our mission.
Right.
How did this come to be? And you guys have a big part in this, too.
Right. Well, you know, I'm fortunate enough to have worked with a lot of people over the last 15 years to get this law passed in Illinois. And Pat Quinn is fabulous on it, and Jen Walling, and Senator Heather Steens, and Pam Althoff. A lot of people worked hard. Sandy Pihos worked really hard. So we got this law, and now we've got the infrastructure. We've got compost facilities in place.
Well, let's go back real quick. And the law was passed in 2009 and became effective January 1st, 2010, which has made it easier to compost food waste mm-hmm. in the state of Illinois. SB 99, a lot of people talk about that. The problem is that here we are 3 years down the road, and there's still it's not like this has become a burgeoning new industry where people are raking in the dough.
Well, I don't think anybody's going to start raking in the dough just yet. But I think what's going to happen is people are understanding the need for it
mm-hmm.
to capture that 93 billion pounds a year, or some unbelievable number of food scraps we have every year in our country. So we want to get that nutrient, but the drought was a great wake-up call, I think, to everybody. Soil composted with food really holds more water, holds all those nutrients, reduces the chemicals that are needed. It's a win-win-win. And so maybe the money part won't show up just yet, but a lot of the farmers we've heard who had food scrap-based compost that they were using, their corn made it this year.
Really?
Yes, sir. Yes, out in LaSalle County. In Kendall County, we had some farmers using compost from a company called Compost Supply,
mm-hmm.
food-based compost. Their corn made it.
Interesting.
So if we can grow more corn and have less chemicals to wash off into our rivers, then we are talking money saving.
Well, we're talking on the program I don't know, it was last week or a couple of weeks ago, where there was an Iowa State study about rotating crops and using organic methods versus what we call now conventional methods, and how much more effective they were because they replenished the soil. And one way to replenish the soil is with this food scrap composting, or F, and that's why they call it F-scrap.
Yes.
And I guess it's part of it. That whole change in name is to take the stigma out of it.
Yes, sir.
Because people, part of the problem before we passed SB 99 was that food waste was put in the same category with mercury, basically. It was toxic.
Garbage.
Garbage. It was considered toxic. And we had to, it's just food, folks. It's lettuce and it's stuff like that. Yeah, if you don't do it right, it will stink when you put it in your compost pile. But add oxygen is what I recommend.
Right. Well, you know, George Washington was an unbelievable composter. Unbelievable. So we have a history of making muck in our country from food scraps, and we just want to continue that with education and awareness, and that's what this seminar is about.
Mm-hmm.
Building and looking towards the future. We're at 7 billion people on the planet. We're going to be at 8 billion people in 12 years. We're going to need to increase food by 50% at the same time that we're losing soil and healthy soil.
Mm-hmm.
So adding nutrients back, adding water back, these are the answers that we have to be working towards.
And that's, and obviously there's water in food scraps, and
yes,
it's one of the ways that we are able to conserve. What about the competition between composting stuff and garbage disposals and sinks? What's the story on garbage disposals?
Garbage disposals use 8 gallons of clean water for every 1 pound of food we put down them. And food, the food that we put down a garbage disposal, right, like apple cores and banana peels, are 90% water. So we're wasting water two ways. We're making electricity that uses water, making hazardous waste to send it to a water sanitary treatment center where the medicines are. And we're taking that good water from an apple core and we're mixing it with antibiotics and hormones and chemo treatments. Why not?
Not
put
to
it
mention
back?
Oils and pesticides and everything
and
else.
Triclosans. Yes, you're right.
That everything we put into our, you know, we take this clean potable water, we turn it into poison, and then what do? We try to rehabilitate it.
Exactly.
And we spend a lot of money trying to rehabilitate
and
it.
And we don't even know how to do that. We can't get triclosan out of our water yet, just yet. Probably there are ways, but not affordable ways and not fast ways.
Mm-hmm.
So why not take, like nature does, take that apple core and put it back? And that's pretty much making it simple. And that's why we get rid of the word waste in the food scrap.
Because it was giving people the wrong idea.
Exactly. Waste is,
well,
not waste.
Yeah, there's this competition now, or this movement to figure out what the right phrase is. Because it's all about branding, folks.
Yes.
You know, it's what some people are so good at that they change the, you know, the people who can hire public relations firms control the argument. Why? Because that's what they do all day, is they sit around figuring out how to rebrand their argument in a better way. The people who don't have the money are stuck with things they call it food waste, and everybody has this association with toxic stuff in their
negatives,
head.
Negatives, right.
Negatives, right. So it needs to be positive.
And so
even
this,
scrap is not the right word. That's
organics.
That's not
organics, yeah, is what we need.
F organics? I don't know.
There you go. But you know, there are restaurants like Lou Malnati's. They're dying to have all of their restaurants with food scrap composting. So we're hoping to get a lot of information out there.
Yeah.
And we are thrilled. You know, DCEO, this is the third of three conferences that they planned to get food scrap composting going. And they are funding this through the Illinois Recycling Association. And one of the great speakers coming is from the U.S. Composting Council. And I'm thrilled to hear him coming to talk, Al Ratty, and hear what he has to say, because he's going to give us a national perspective. And we're kind of behind.
We are. And that's the other problem, is Illinois is way behind in this. All the states around us do food composting and we don't.
And, you know, some companies are really starting to help. Like now there's washcloths out there now that you would use. And then
another one of your props here, I see.
One of my props. It's called Eco Towels.
It's a visual aid, folks, but we don't have visuals.
I know. So I just had to read it. Eco Towels made out of bamboo and cotton so that we can compost them. And Chinette now has plates that tell you that there's no plastic. Right on the front, they tell you 100% compostable.
It's wrapped in plastic.
Yes, it is. So hopefully someday that's going to be a compostable
but
corn plastic.
But the plates themselves.
Yes, the biggest part.
That's excellent. Okay, we have time for one more really quick question. Let's see. That is Bernie. How are you doing? Go ahead.
Pretty
Sorry.
Good, pretty good. Hey, listen, I just wanted to say one thing. One word that I learned from Norman Goldman was externality. I think everybody, starting out when you're age of one, should learn externality and understand that what is being manufactured is there's something lingering.
So you're saying that when in the manufacturing process is often something that you didn't count on being in the product.
Right, and it just hangs in limbo. It just, you know, and somebody's dumping it in the ocean, somebody's doing this and doing that. And people just have to understand, and you know, I mean, this is why we're progressives, is because some idiot is streaming some product up. How are you going to get rid of it?
Well, you know, and that's a really good point, Bernie, is that for too long, we have not considered what happens at the end of the product's life. And that's the whole cradle-to-cradle philosophy. Great comment, Bernie. Thank you very much for calling. And we need to be more aware of that.
The life cycle analysis of things, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What's the name of the guy who wrote Cradle-to-Cradle? Bill McDonough. Thank you. Get that book. I've read that, and it tells you right there what we're dealing with. And that book was written, you know, a decade ago.
At least.
At least. Mm-hmm. And we're still down that road and still not paying enough attention.
Right.
Kay McKean, thank you so much. If people want more information, go to my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show. All the information about the Looking to the Future Food Scrap Composting Seminar in Lombard. Most of you won't be there, but I'll fill you in on it. I'm going to go. And information about Scarce. If you want to recycle, I've got a garage full of books for you, okay?
Oh, we want them. We want
them. All right.
Them. Yes.
And Kathleen and I have been talking about that for a long time. We don't throw them away because we got to get them off to Scarce. So
well, bring them over and come for a tour, Mike. I'd love to show you our place.
I will do that. That's next on the agenda. And I need to have you back on the show more often than once every 3 or 4 years.
Well, January 30th, we're having an open house at Scarce. 9 a.m. to 6 p.m.
See, you got to say that out loud so Lisa can put it up on Facebook.
There you go. And that open house, it's free. And just come and see everything that we do because people just don't know. All the education programs and all the things that we get reused. We're thrilled with what we get to do. And it's our 23rd year, so we're pretty excited.
I got a quick tweet here. It says, I have compostable dinnerware. It's made of 100% bamboo, and it's beautiful. See, people are making...
And the bamboo is reusable. The bamboo is reusable, and then you can compost it, right?
Yeah. All right, Kay. Well, we will talk again.
Thanks, guys. Thanks very much.
My pleasure. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Whether or not we have an ice storm today, you should keep the Care of Trees phone number handy when bad weather hits. There's no need to panic and really no need to call your brother-in-law with a chainsaw when your prized tree ends up flat on your front lawn or on your car, your garage, or your neighbor's tree. The Care of Trees has 24-hour emergency service, and they understand how dangerous it is to remove or prune storm-damaged trees. The Care of Trees will show up quickly, get the job done safely, and minimize further risk to your property and your loved ones. The Care of Trees shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of your life. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4222. 847-394-4220, the Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. In 60 seconds, the real Farmer John.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure. You're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
I wandered around with nothing more than time on my hand. I was lost in the night with no sight of you. At a time you were so blue and lonely, heading for the light.
This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk. AM and FM. And I am pleased as punch to go to line two, bring in Farmer John Peterson from Angelic Organics. John, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. It's been a good day, a jam-packed show, and I'm glad to top it off with you. I'm looking at your picture here on my website. I don't know if you saw that, but I put up your award from Roger Ebert on The Real Dirt on Farmer John from the from Roger Ebert's Film Festival. I want one of those thumbs up, gold thumbs up. How do I scam one of those?
You can borrow mine, okay?
Okay, that sounds good. Nah, I wouldn't take it from you. I might drop it or something. And
you could forge a little plaque that goes over my plaque, and you could feel very special for a few days.
For those of you who don't know about Farmer John, he is the star of a documentary film that I was surprised when I was looking at it that it was filmed in 2005. I mean, it's been a while, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, it was released in 2005, but my mother started filming for it. And she didn't know that it was for a film, but she started probably around 1952. And then the director took up where she left off. And so really, I was filmed for 50 years.
Yeah, and that's the amazing thing about this documentary. You see documentaries, and then in the early part of people's lives, if they're doing something, you got these four or five stills, and then the camera zooms in and it pans on a still. You know, it's the Ken Burns method, okay? Which is because that's all you got. Your whole life has been documented. It's kind of an odd thing because, you know, your mom bought the camera and then, you know, you grew up on this farm in Caledonia, Illinois, and it was in the family for generations. And the documentary tells about the tribulations of you trying to save the farm and live your life at the same time, figure out who you were. And because you hooked up with artists in the 60s and 70s, I assume that some of those people had cameras, too, because you've got film from that period.
I did some of the footage then.
You did some of it.
Yeah, the camera was falling apart. The 8mm camera was falling apart by that time. I had to tape it together, but I was still able to get some good footage. So my mother did 20 years. I did probably 8 or 9 years, and then Taggart did the rest. So, we're very fortunate. And it's interesting for me to see my life, this panorama of my life. And, it reminds me of how the farm is such an incredibly important part of my life. And I mean, in the film, the director was at the auction where pretty much everything, not quite, but almost everything was sold out in the early 80s to get out of a bad financial situation. And then the building back up of the farm is chronicled. And I just look at it and I go, yep, I'm sure committed to this place.
Yeah, you were. And ultimately, you were. And what's so amazing, and I highly recommend it. If you haven't seen The Real Dirt on Farmer John, pick up a copy. Okay? I've got the link on my website, MikeNovak.net. You can go straight to Angelic Organics and order it from there. I know it's all over the place, too. You can probably get it on Amazon and whatever else. But I always recommend people go straight to the source to order these things. And it's won just about every festival award that is possible to win. And it's just fascinating. It's just an incredible study of what it takes to run a farm, what it takes to be a human being, what it takes to connect with your community. I guarantee you will not be disappointed. Now, but that's not the reason you're here, because, one of the things you learn from seeing the documentary is that you save the farm, and this is not a spoiler alert or anything. It's because everybody knows you're there. But it's how you did it that's important. And one of the things you did is create a different kind of community. You were in the vanguard of CSAs before many people knew what they were, and that's community-supported agriculture. And at this point, John, I want to bring in Tom Spaulding, who's the executive director of Angelic Organics Learning Center. And if you're a regular listener to my show, you know that I talk about them a lot, and I have over the past 4.5 years here on WCPT. Martha Boyd has been on my program a lot, who works with you guys and has been a great help to me in introducing me to people in the agricultural community. Tom Spaulding, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Mike, for having us on.
It's my pleasure.
Hi,
I just want to give you a couple of seconds to explain why you were attracted to Angelic Organics.
Wow. I love this farm, and I've committed a good portion of my adult life. I'm in my 50s now, and a good portion of my life to it. And I was working internationally before I came to the farm. I worked 15 years in all over the world, in Africa, Latin America, and I was focused on economic and social development and kind of the ecological wreck that we're on, and working on the Earth Summit and these kinds of issues internationally. And I got really drawn into the farm just because I was living in this area and traveling internationally doing work, and saw the farm as really something that's good medicine for what ails us in the world. And because John's committed to the farm, but I don't think everyone understands that John's idea of a farm is different than a lot of people's ideas of a farm. This is a community resource like your library, your health center, your university. I mean, it's a place where people gather and talk about things way beyond food and farming. That's where it starts.
Yeah.
But it goes all into, like you said, the film's not just about a farm. It's about how to run your life. And I think that's what drew me to it. It was like, here locally is a resource that can really pull people in. We can talk about the renewal of not only the earth and the ecology, but we can talk about the renewal of our economy. We can talk about renewal of the culture. We can talk about renewal of relationships locally between people and help rebuild the fabric of the society we want to see in the future that's going to make this planet and this region sustainable.
Yeah, and now we're at a point where, you know, buildings are finite, they decay, and to keep this going and actually, you know, a barn kind of represents a history, and it's also, I would imagine, John, you think of it as part of the family.
Oh yeah, it's the most beautiful thing, and I'm so in love with these barns. I saw them go up when I was little, taking care of them all these decades, and the thing is, it's a bit beyond my scope to really keep them at the standard they need to be. And the reason they need to be at that standard, besides that we use them for farming and packing out 1,600 boxes of CSA vegetables a week in the season, but besides, beyond that, they receive people. They host groups. They are the shelter for groups of people who come here to learn. And that's not just having a roof over the hayloft or the vegetable packing shed. That's having a space where people can gather, protected from the elements, in an inspirational environment. And that's really why we've launched this Kickstarter campaign, because the social realm is something, or the cultural realm, that it's very, very hard for a farm like ours to finance, to underwrite. We've certainly done a lot of it. I put a tremendous amount into these buildings so that they can receive people. We have thousands of people who come every year. But it's really beyond my means and beyond the capacity of our CSA operation to put them in the shape they need to be in order to be the kind of center, community center, that we want to be.
So this is why I'm going to tell people right now, go to Kickstarter, type in Barns Are For People 2, or go to my website, MikeNovak.net. I've got the link to it there. You have 18 days to go. You're trying to raise $150,000. It's a lot of money, but you know what? keeping a barn up is expensive. And I want people to contribute whatever they can. Angelic Organics Learning Center has helped me out. They've helped a lot of people. They're teaching people about the earth. They're teaching people about life. And I want folks to go to the site right now if they can. Give $10, give $20, whatever you can. I mean, you guys would like to have a few more higher end things, but you know, it's just so worthwhile. I can't recommend this highly enough.
Hey, Mike, this is Tom Spaulding. We have over 150 beginning farmer graduates of our Farm Beginnings program now. 70% of them are farming. The Angelic Organics was the only CSA when I hooked up with them back in the early 90s and serving Chicago. There's over 80, almost 90 CSAs now serving Chicago. This farm has been such a big contribution towards the growth of the CSAs and the local farmers around the area. Come learn what we're doing.
Yeah.
Help rebuild. And I just think, John, and it deserves a lot of credit for opening the farm
and
making it possible for this to happen. And the barn space, will hold 100.
Tom, I got to interrupt, Tom.
Tom,
we're out of time. We're gonna follow through on this, okay? I'm gonna do updates on this. We got 18 days to raise the money. I want people to go to the Kickstarter. John, thanks for the ride in the truck last fall.
Loved it.
I'm looking forward to another one. You guys take care. We will be in touch.
Thanks,
all right.
Mike. Thanks,
all right. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Hey, all we can say is go green or
go home.
Go home.